This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Camille A. Brown is a choreographer, and she watches Spike Lee's movie Bamboozled at least once a year. Now, this is relevant because this is a film about a modern televised minstrel show where black actors wear blackface. Camille started seeing minstrelsy everywhere in pop culture. She saw it in reality shows like Basketball Wives. She sees it in Dave Chappelle's decision to leave his hit comedy show. Well, now Camille is addressing minstrelsy in a dance performance. At the American Dance Festival, the company Camille A. Brown and Dancers will perform a show called Mr. Tal E. Rance, and that's tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock at Reynolds Industry Theater at Duke University. And also, and she will be on the show very shortly, we will talk with Camille. Right now, Lightsey Darst is with us. Lightsey Darst is a writer and a critic, and she is blogging about the American Dance Festival for the Huffington Post. Lightsey, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the American Dance Festival. It's a sort of an annual summer ritual. We're used to it, and we enjoy it here in the Triangle. How important is it in the world of dance, this festival?
Well, as you said, the Triangle residents will mostly notice the summer performance series here. But nationally, ADF is more significant for education, commissioning, and outreach. Education, there are about 400 students here taking the summer program. There are also younger students, and there's an MFA program here. The commissioning series, there are at least three new works being created this year at ADF. And in outreach, ADF runs a host of programs. There's the Audience Memory Program, which studies how audiences remember dance. There's also a TV series that ADF has been producing called Free to Dance, which is focused on the African-American dance experience in the U.S., and many other programs.
And that commissioning, to take one of the items that you talked about, is really important in just keeping dance alive and making sure that there's a lot of new dance in the world, right?
Right. Young choreographers really need the resources to create work. It's especially important to get access to space and to dancers, and ADF can really provide that. This year, there are three choreographers in the Footprint series, and their concert is towards the end of the summer, starts on July 22nd. And that should be a really exciting show for Triangle residents to see, because this is work that is created at ADF on ADF dancers. So these are pieces that you can't see anywhere else.
And the idea of exploring memory, how people remember dance, I mean, this is something that interests you, I think, at least tangentially. You talk about the way we should watch dance and the way, that we should not necessarily be intimidated by dance.
Yeah, I think viewers often find dance intimidating because they're getting caught up in looking for a meaning or looking for a message or a story. And I've even seen people turn on their cell phones to read their programs in the middle of a dance piece, because they're thinking they're missing something. But what they're missing is this actual live experience, the kinetic experience that's occurring on stage. So I would actually advise viewers to let themselves have an experience with dance and not concentrate so much on distilling a meaning or a message from it, because there are a number of experiences you can take away from any one piece, and these are more valuable than that single message you might think is implanted in there.
Well, Camille A. Brown is a choreographer who has to deal with this all the time in the dance that she creates and in the moves that she makes on stage, and she joins us now. Camille, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
When you think about this idea of what audiences take away from dance and how they view dance, you have a show like Mr. Tal E. Rance, right? And
right.
I don't know if I've got that right, but you have some thoughts behind that. Minstrelsy is an idea. It's a theme. And yet there is another experience. There's a kinetic experience. Dancers are dancing. They're moving on the stage. How do you balance those two things, a theme, an idea that you have in mind, and the aesthetic experience of dance itself?
Right. Well, I put a lot of thought into thinking that, because it is a balance. You know, I'm dealing with a strong topic like minstrelsy. It has a lot of history. And the balance for me is, as a choreographer, how do you show this to people that don't know or don't have any idea about minstrelsy, and after the show might want to Google it and find out more? And then what is the balance of having an audience that is very much aware of the history, and but you don't want to make them feel like, you know, they're at a history class. So I try to balance it. I try to have the audience have fun too, because minstrelsy is also a celebration of the humor of the black experience as well. So I wanted to make sure that I had a balance of the history, also of current minstrelsy that I see, and then of the celebration.
And tell us why that issue and topic is so important to you.
Well, the Mr. Tolerance started as a personal frustration that I had about wearing a mask. You know, I am a choreographer, and people would give me certain advice to say, oh, you know, well, the way you can climb the choreographic ladder is, you know, start socializing with people in the know, and, you know, get around people, other choreographers, and, you know, people will start looking at you then. And I just asked myself, well, why do I have to play this imaginary game? Why can't the work speak for itself? And I just felt like I just had to put this mask on. And I also started thinking about the mask that Black performers had to wear in the past as well. So I wanted to do a piece that was a combination of both themes. And I also wanted it to be relevant to today, so I started looking at things that I might think are current minstrelsy, and a lot of it is on the way Black women are portrayed in the media and also in reality shows. So I just wanted to do a topic that really talked about all of that.
And this really suggests that dance, and you know, certainly in particular this performance, but all dance to one degree or another is political. It is about bodies, and it's about the performance of bodies and our perception of bodies, would you say,
right,
Camille?
Yes, totally. And I think that also when you're dealing with the Black body, there's another thing there. I mean, you know, movement and the idea and the way we're moving. And for us, you know, we're playing these stereotypes, these caricatures of these things that we see of, you know, the video vixen or the thug, you know, these ideas that we're constantly seeing in the media. So we have to take on these images in the body, too. And those have to be able to read very distinct. So,
Lightsey, how about that? The sort of politics of dance, or politics embedded in dance?
Right. I think that people often think dance is not particularly political because it usually doesn't use words and doesn't have that kind of specificity. But as you said, these are bodies on stage, and we often look to dance to provide us with ideal bodies doing ideal things, ideal relationships, ideal partnering, ideal love. So if you think about dance that way, then you'll see that all these decisions that choreographers make about what bodies to put on stage, how to represent them, how they should touch each other, these are all political decisions. I also think that dance can be more politically moving than some other political art because it is this experience that you have. It's not an argument that someone presents to you. It's an actual physical experience that you live through.
And Camille, I know you've thought about this business of body type, too, the idea of which bodies are put on stage and what they represent. I mean, you've had that experience as a dancer, as a student in the School of the Arts, who has become a choreographer. Tell us a little bit about that and your experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the question of ideal body is, it's subjective. It's whatever the ideal is for the work that you're making. I know for me that the question of whether I had the ideal body was constantly a discussion. And a lot of times I wasn't picked to even audition for things because I just wasn't the right body type. I couldn't fit the costume. There was always something. And so now as a choreographer, I also danced for Ronald K. Brown. And there was no discussion about an ideal. It was just, can this person do the movement? Are they capable of doing the work that I'm creating as a choreographer? And for me, now that I have my own company, these are the things that I look at. It's not about the body type. It's about who is this individual, because I believe that on stage you want the individual to speak, and I want people to see us as humans first and just people first that just happen to be communicating through dance versus something that is presentational and, you know, for the enjoyment and all of this stuff. But just to really break that fourth wall and just to the movements that we're doing, I want them to be able to get up and feel like they can do that themselves.
But, Lightsey, I wonder how you feel about that. As a critic, can a choreographer really be body type blind because they know the audience in their daily commerce doesn't see the person first? They see the body type first. They see the color first. Whatever they say about, I never see a Black person walk in the room or any of that stuff. Truly, we notice if a person, their body type, and make judgments quickly. Can a choreographer afford to ignore that?
I think that the answer to that is in what Camille's saying about what the bodies do. if the choreographer puts the bodies on stage and they become more than bodies to the people in the audience, they become people and they're active, they're creating something, then people in the audience will begin to see them as individuals too. I mean, that, of course, stereotypes exist and people are going to seize the stereotype as soon as the person comes onto stage, but that won't last if the choreographer can create really individual motion and movement. If as Camille says, what we start to see is people dancing and think of ourselves maybe as people who could do those same things, that's transformative. Then we're changing this setup of ideal bodies on stage and watchers sitting passively in the audience.
And Camille, that suggests to me the real power of dance as politics. Because as Lightsey said earlier, we don't think about it as political because it doesn't have words, which means that all of those impulses and stereotypes that we internalize, we never verbalize. We never sort of bring them to the consciousness. Dance has a way of making us think about what it is about the stereotypes we've carried. Do you think?
Right.
And is that something that you bring to dance as a choreographer? Are you conscious of that as a choreographer?
Yes, it's funny that you're talking about voice because we actually do speak in this work as well. So we take on the shapes of the stereotypes, but we also do or say some of the phrases that these stereotypes say that the audience might know. Because I love theater, I'm heavily inspired by it, so my work is just not necessarily about dance, but it's about character work and music and how all of these things come together to create the story.
Lightsey, is that something that you would encourage audiences to do, too, to see dance not as dance, but as theater, as something much larger than simply dance?
Definitely. I think of dance as being kind of like a cloud, that there's some things at the middle of the cloud that everyone is going to agree on, that's dance. But as you get out towards the edges, there's something that I might call dance and someone else might call theater. And in particular, that line or space between dance and theater, there's a lot of really exciting work happening there. So I think it's helpful if audiences can accept what's happening on stage and not interrogate it so much as, you know, is this dance, is what I'm seeing dance right at this moment?
That raises the question of how important festivals like ADF are. The fact that you come into a community that, you know, for the rest of the year doesn't focus as much on dance. So it's not a center for dance like the bigger cities. But it does expose audiences to this and allows them to think more broadly about an art form that you wouldn't if this festival didn't land in your backyard once a year.
Right. Yes, I think that a festival like this can really help change people's ideas about what dance is, especially with the choreographers that are brought in, especially the younger choreographers like Camille and some of these other young choreographers in the Footprints program, for example. There's also a very big and important effect on the students who are here. The 400-something college students who are taking dance classes here, seeing all this dance and performing in some of it. They're going to go on and become dancers in companies across the country, and they'll also become choreographers.
Camille, what was your experience at the School of the Arts? And did you? I assume that you spent a lot of time at ADF when you were studying in North Carolina.
I actually did not.
There we go.
Right. I loved my time at NCSA. I tried to go back at least once a year to say hello to some of the faculty members, some of the teachers that are still there. And, you know, I still have my composition improv book that I look at sometimes and my journal that one of my teachers, Trish Casey, she made us write in. I still go back to there. I think I would not have wanted to go anywhere else. You know, I've made wonderful connections, lifetime friends. The techniques that they taught us, I mean, were just so beneficial to my body and my spirit and where I am now. I'm originally from New York, so I started going to the Ailey School in high school, and that's where I would go back to every summer for their Ailey program. But going to ADF with Ron Brown in 2003 and then in 2006 as a dancer, I was just so amazed at the program at ADF, and I just thought it was such a fabulous opportunity for students to see so many different types of dance and choreographers and take classes from everyone, and it was just wonderful. And to be back here now under my own name, I just never thought that would happen. You know, I came here as a dancer to interpret someone else's movement. And now, in 2013, I'm doing it, and I have a voice, and it's a political one, and there's so many special moments that I'm really treasuring, and the company is treasuring as well. So it's been an amazing experience, and there are a lot of students from NCSA that are here now. So that's also amazing to connect to them now as an alumni, so it's great.
Lightsey, what are some of the things you're excited about this year at ADF?
Well, beyond Camille's performance, I'm looking forward to the Irish company Pony Dance, which is doing a site-specific performance at Motorco, which is a fun Durham venue. If you've never seen site-specific work before, it's usually a more casual, more relaxed way of viewing dance. So that should be enjoyable. There's also the Trisha Brown Company, which is coming starting July 19th. That's a very important American modern dance company headed by an innovative American choreographer. The beautiful, silky style of modern dance, also very playful. And then I'm looking forward to the Footprints concert. That's July 22nd, and that's the work I was speaking about earlier that was commissioned for ADF and created here. And those are three up-and-coming young American choreographers. Should be really interesting.
Have you followed much of the commissioned work at well, let's just stick with ADF. I know there are others as well. Do they tend to get lives beyond these festivals? And again, how important are they to the world of dance?
You know, it really depends on the piece. Sometimes the piece that the choreographer is creating is a version of something that he or she has created elsewhere, and then maybe this is not really, it's not really going to go on from here. He or she will revert to what he or she was doing before. But I know, especially for younger choreographers, it can be really important to have a commissioned piece with a big cast, a cast of 20 or more here, big stage, budget for production. I mean, that can be a huge thing in moving a choreographer's imagination forward.
Yeah, I was going to say, Camille, that has to be important to have a big idea and realize that unless somebody commissions it and, you know, lays out the money to stage this thing, it's going to remain in your head. So it's got to be pretty important to see it on the stage.
Yeah, I mean, commission work is hard, and, you know, it goes into another discussion about grants and all of these other things that involve money. But for me, I just try to say if I have an idea, regardless of whether I get a grant, I'm going to do it, even if it calls for me to do it in my living room and to choreograph it there, or for the other dancers and I to meet in the park. You know, it's got to get out. Your creative idea has to get out. And thank goodness there are places like ADF that are giving choreographers opportunities to make their visions become reality. So it's wonderful.
What are some of the things you're excited about this year's festival?
Me?
Camille, yeah.
Being here.
and when you're not working, what are you going to be watching?
When I'm not working?
What are you going to be watching? Yeah, what are some of the things you're excited about seeing?
Oh, I mean, I feel like I'm working the minute I get off the plane to be here. I mean, I'm excited to connect with my friends. I know a lot of people that are here for the MFA and a lot of students that I know that are here, so it's wonderful to be in connection with them. And I had a teacher, Andrea Woods. She was a guest artist during my time at NCSA, and she's actually going to be moderating our show tonight. So I'm having a lot of full circle moments here, and I'm trying to really just really embrace them because, you know, like I said before, I was here as a dancer, and now I'm here with my own company, and it's just an amazing experience. And, you know, I have interviews and a lot of other things that I have to do, but that's one of the main things. And, of course, sharing the work and having a discussion after the piece with the community are things that, you know, we can't wait for as a company.
Well, we're happy to have you back, Camille. Thanks so much for talking with us. Camille A. Brown and dancers will perform Mr. Tolerance tonight and tomorrow, 8 o'clock, Reynolds Industries Theater at Duke. Camille's a choreographer, dancer, and artistic director. Lightsey Darst is a writer and a critic. Lightsey, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we're going to say goodbye to Tom Rankin, but not really. He's going to stick around. He's just stepping down as the head of Duke Center for Documentary Studies. Been there for 15 years. We'll take a look back and a look ahead when Tom Rankin joins us next. Stay tuned.